This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 96-year-old Joe Garabedian of Fresno, California. He served with the Deadeye Division, the 96th Infantry Division in World War II, ending up in a machine gun squad in the 381st Regiment. Did you know what you were getting into? I don't know if people today understand all that went into a machine gun outfit in those days.
Well, whether it's a rifleman or whether it's a machine gunner, you had to tear that machine apart, blindfolded, and put it back together in the dark on a Grand rifle, which is one of the best rifles in the Army because it was automatic and gas-propelled, better even than Germany, who had a bolt action. We never had bolt action. Ours was automatic. You just pulled the trigger. On the machine gun, you have to take it apart, blindfolded, lay the parts down on the table. The most dangerous thing in there is a spring about 16 inches long. You don't pull the trigger when you lift. Well, let me say like this. I've been saying it for years and years. Bolts forward, covers down. The second gunner puts the belt through. You cock it. That's bolt forward, covers down. And all you got to do is just lift that up. The spring will push it forward. And when he goes forward, the firing pin hits and the power, the blow, pushes it back. So that's 650 rounds times a minute. But we were told, don't sleep on the trigger. You're not supposed to go over fire bursts of six. Every sixth one is a tracer. Fire bursts of six. Fire bursts of six. That's to keep the barrel cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's water cooled. The tube is put down into the ground so the enemy can't see the steam coming up. It produces steam in a short while. But you don't want to hurt your barrel. You have a spare barrel. If you burn it out, and if it gets too hot and burn it out, you have to twist it out, put a new barrel in there, and bring it out and click it back and hope you got the clicks back, because if you make it too tight, the shell will fracture and you're out of business until you can get it out of there. You've got to put it a little bit short and then tighten it a notch or two. No, I did not think, what am I getting myself into? I was so, please believe me, I was so damn patriotic to see what we were doing. We had plenty of food. We had plenty of ammunition. There was 90,000 troops on the ocean when I was going across.
Mm-hmm.
I was on that ship for 40 days. We stopped up at Mariani for a beer party. What that is you climb down the rope ladder and they bring some ham sandwiches and you have a little beer party, and if you're lucky enough you can get a clean shower, because on the ships it's all salt water.
Mm-hmm.
For troops. I was walking around one of the bone piles, junkyard, and I see this can of food, never been opened yet. I figured, you know what, let me take that on the ship with me. So we took some beer with us going back, and we took our shovels and popped the end off, and it was beautiful. Chip beef. Everybody had a hand in it. We didn't care if we got sick because it was enjoyable. So, yes, a machine gunner is dangerous. That's why, well, first of all, the officer threw his binoculars. And, you know, I am a poor farm kid. Never seen binoculars in my life, half decent. So I picked it up and put it inside my shirt. After things kind of settled, I took it out and was looking around. And, well, zing, right through my shoulder. Mm-hmm. So it was a sniper. Later on at the Army reunions, one of the guys told me, he says, when they found the guy, they counted 60 shots. He was up in the palm tree.
Mm.
So I got up and I started running. I run about 10 feet. The blood is squirting out. I'm hollering, medics, medics, and I fell down. So my medic comes and, Garabedian, where's your medical kit? I says, it's on the Jeep. I said, I didn't want to carry it. So they give me a shot of morphine. They patched me up. That's the only patching up I got until I got to Hollandia, New Guinea. So this is an interesting part. They managed to get me on a stretcher. And a fellow by the name of Medziak out of Chicago, he was underneath the bush. He reached down and grabbed a hold of my stretcher. And one hand pulled me underneath that bush. It took another half hour before the firing. You don't fire all day long. It just goes in spurts. So then at about 5:30 in the evening, the Jeep came by, and they put three of us on. and took us back 14 miles to the field hospital. And my God, we got there. When we got a couple hundred feet from there, we had to stretch a cable on a track layer that was there for this purpose, just to pull the jeeps or the trucks through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mud was so deep. They actually slid the vehicles through there. They put me in a tent, and the guy says, contending me, he says, where's your dog tag? I says, I left the back on a Jeep. He says, that's a heck of a place to leave it. He says, how am I going to know who you are? Well, it's plain English. I'm Joseph Garabedian, 3942-1644 is my serial number. Okay, so he put that on a shipping tag, put it around my neck, and that night I was in that tent dark. Just pitch dark. I felt something coming out of my mouth, so I guess it must have been blood. And I took that shipping tag and I wiped my mouth with it. The next morning, when he comes in, somebody comes in to see who I am, tend to me. He said, "Where's your dog tag? How come you got your dog tag all dirty?" I said, "Well, I had to wipe my blood out of my mouth." Well, anyhow, then they took me into the field hospital, cleaned me up, put me on a hospital ship. That afternoon, I was on the way to Hoanya. The ship was not a troop ship. It was a roomy, like a passenger ship, but it was a hospital ship. We had beds to sleep in. We had commodes. It took us, I think, 2 weeks or so to get there, maybe 3 weeks, I don't know. Had a little constipation problem. So when I got there, the guy that was in charge of me, he says, "Okay, I've read your orders. Here's your bedpan." I said, "What's a bedpan for?" He says, "You have to use it." I said, "I don't like a bedpan. I won't use it. I don't know how to use it." He says, "My orders say you have to use it." So I used it. He says, "You will never use a bedpan again under my watch." Anyhow, I was there until I think about the 19th of December. I was happy there, even though I got nothing but a turkey tail.
So I'm going to bounce around with you a little bit. The reason I asked about the machine gunner thing, so this is a heavy thing to carry. You've got to carry the barrel, the tripod. Someone's got to carry some ammunition.
Yeah, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 ammunition bearers.
Uh-huh.
The gunner and the second gunner take turns, but when they get tired, they'll let us handle it, which we enjoyed it. So you got about 4 ammunition bearers. Each can's got 650 rounds a minute, plus the one that is going in, and you don't sleep on it. It's like not like on the movies where they just fall asleep on the trigger. It's the fire bursts at 6 and you stop. You come down a trail real nice. You don't even have to look through a sight, because you can see where it's hitting. Every 6th one being a tracer, just automatically you can just bring yourself right down that path. And it's got a good sight at a mile. The M1 rifle was the same shell that used the Garand, the same shell that the machine gunner belt had, and the same shell that fit in the carbine, which was a 15 shell clip.
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, I'm guessing you had to know that the odds are more against you if you're part of a machine gun squad, because you're a bigger target for the enemy. You're the one they want to take out.
But you know, there's a certain thing, is again, please believe me, patriotism that stays with you, and you're living through hell anyhow. You're living through hell anyhow, so you just as well do what the guys did at Gettysburg or where else, or Washington crossing the Delaware. We're all the same people. It's the same country. How this country did this in 250 years, I don't know. But yes, we knew, but you can't say nothing. You can't back out.
Did they tell you this is how long the average machine gunner lasts in combat?
It's in writing. 3 minutes.
3 minutes of combat.
Yes.
You're going to be killed or wounded.
Yeah, in 3 minutes they'll spot you. That's why you want to fire for burst of 6 or 3 or 4 times and then move. You don't stay in the same spot. Now, some of these places that make their surroundings out of concrete and everything else, like German did and all that, once you throw a grenade, you got the whole outfit.
So you're 20 years old. You've never been in combat before, and you're landing at Leyte. And this is part of a larger plot, because the Americans had been in the Philippines. They'd been either captured or chased out. Thousands of them are on the Bataan Death March. MacArthur gets out of there, but he says, "I shall return." And the day that he actually fulfilled that promise was the day you were landed on the same beach?
Yes. We landed on the 20th. On the 27th, we turned left on Tanawan, and then on the 28th, we were going into the Kailing. That evening, when all this action came on and I got wounded, I read where they had to go back 1,000 feet and regroup and start all over again to go into Kailang. That's when the most of the fighting started. There wasn't too much fighting before there. On Catman Hill and some of those places there was, it was very slow, but it picked up. They weren't too prepared.
So what was happening right before you got hit?
I was looking through my binoculars like this, behind the gun itself. But there was, just before that, a mortar shell blew up behind us, and actually none of us got any shrapnel, but the noise was deafening. It was rather quiet, but then all it takes is one fake shooter, and you got a bunch of people shooting. I remember the first action we got there, we were shooting up into a palm tree, and in a few seconds, the whole palm tree was pruned. The officer was, stop it, you know. It's amazing how they would be able to hide in a palm tree. There's not that much place to hide up those trees.
And you've made it clear how patriotic you felt, how important this was for you to do this for your country. But as you're entering into combat for the first time in your life, were you scared? Were you nervous? Anxious?
As long as you're whole, you're scared as hell. Well, if you get wounded. Now, when I got wounded, I didn't even think of dying. I don't know why. All I knew is I sprung up, ran about 10 feet and fell, like I said a while ago. You're in it now. You're in it. I didn't get into the tough fighting where they did in Okinawa. So I got letters from some of the guys. They said it was, you think Leyte was hell. This is altogether hell because they had thousands of people. They lost 1,000 soldiers. We lost 17,000. They're ready for us. They're, you know, it's like football. Offense, defense. They're on defense. They know your spot. They know exactly. They've got their mortars all tuned in, and they know exactly where it's going to fall.
And when you got hit, what did that feel like?
Like a bee sting. Believe me, it didn't hit any bones, I guess that's why, like a bee sting.
So it came in not too far from your head, a couple inches.
Right here, yeah.
Right on your left shoulder.
I think he was trying to hit my head.
Good thing he missed. But he didn't miss by much.
No.
So it goes in vertically, almost, on your left shoulder, and exits down near your tailbone, kind
of? No, in the center of my back.
Right in the center of your back.
Half inch from my spine. I'd have been paralyzed.
Yeah.
That shakes me. In fact, it shakes the doctors when they see it to be that close to the spine.
It's kind of hard to do that. There's a lot of bones that he had to miss.
Well, that's probably where that blood came into my mouth. You know, people ask me, well, how did you get blood through your mouth? I guess it must have been some of that internal injuries.
What about your arm? Did you have the use of that left arm at all?
I didn't have the use of that arm for more than a year. I was in the hospital. From that point on, I got discharged on November 45. We entered the United States in back again on the 2nd of January of 45. I got discharged the end of 45. I got discharged.
Mm-hmm.
My arm was useless. Even now, when the weather gets real cold, this arm is useless because I got a 30% disability on it.
Well, it sounds almost miraculous you were ever able to use it at all.
I use it for everything.
But I'm thinking about the first 30 minutes that you're wounded, because you described it. They get you on a stretcher, but you're still out there, and they're still firing all around you, and your buddy's able to pull you under a bush.
I've often wondered how they got me on the stretcher, but Meziak was the only one under the bush within reach of me, and he pulled it underneath. I guess what happened was they spread out once they got me on the stretcher, and that stretcher is on legs or something, and he's a big, great big Polak, great big Polak. Too bad he had to die. He grabbed me and pulled me underneath.
What do you think would have happened to you if he didn't do that?
They would have nailed me.
They would have seen you.
Yeah. It's hard to say what would have happened. It wasn't too far. But that wasn't very much action. 8 days. Was it worth it? All the training? Now, did the government lose money on me, or did they make?
Well, I think everyone's going to form an opinion about that by the time we're done here. But you had a long journey. I mean, you just said you didn't have the use of your arm for a year.
Yes.
So this is a long time that you're dealing with this daily. When they first get you to a place where they can help, is it sinking into you that you may never be able to use this left arm again?
No, because I was always aggressive. When I came back in 1946, I had my truck and trailer. I was able to use my arm to haul bricks, sand, and gravel for our building. And by February, we were in business. I run the lathe for 13 years. I'd never seen a lathe before. But you learn those things. You're aggressive. It's your chance. You got to do it.
Sounds like you never took anything for granted either.
Listening to my father's stories? No. I'm just thankful that my mother and father were able to come to this country. And not only my mother and father, millions of other people came to this country for a reason: safety and food. At least they would say that when you go to bed at night, you know that you're going to wake up in the morning.
It's time for another break, but there's more to come with 96-year-old Joe Garabedian, how he went from nearly losing his arm, not to mention his life, to launching a business that's still with us three quarters of a century later. Valley Welding and Machine Works in Fresno, California continues to grow, providing custom machines, mostly for the dried fruit and nut industries, all over the globe. And what an example it is of a multi-generation